Imagine sending a tweet and seeing your message blossom on massive trees of light. Data visualizations that help you grasp the vast diversity present in subatomic particles, the tiniest sample of water, or an urban green space. An entire rural mountain town transformed into a multimedia expression of art, activism, and community. Through the art of collaboration, Agnes Chavez helps make all these future visions real. And through them, she engages students across the world through curricula, installations, and online activities.
Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like linguistics, technology, game and object design, and ethics. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by artist and educator Agnes Chavez, who explores the interrelationship between art, science, technology, and nature as a process and tool for social change. As an artist, her work focuses on data visualization, light, sound, and space. As a curriculum developer, she applies the latest arts, science, and technological innovations to youth programming and education. She is a founding member of the Paseo Festival and the founder of the STEM Arts Lab. The lab's STEM Arts curriculum tool is an online platform that complements real-world science and art festivals with STEAM activities and resources. She is also the developer of the Subay multisensory language curriculum for teaching Spanish and English to kids through art, music, and games. Agnes, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Before we get into some of the real nitty-gritty of the work that you've been doing and some of these organizations and efforts that you've had a part in founding and collaborating on, if you could just give us a quick picture of your work as an artist and as an educator and collaborator generally.
Yes, I'm foremost an artist, a sci artist. My work is inspired by science. And I combine art, science, and technology for social change, ecological challenges, addressing some real-world issues usually. I create youth projects that evolve from this art research and exploration. Then I'm also a collaborator. I collaborate with festivals, science labs, and arts organizations to create youth programs, all based on this methodology of combining art, science, and technology for some social ecological cause.
When you say sci art, could you just give an example of what that would be for someone who might not have any idea what that means?
I sometimes think about that, like, because now the new word is STEAM. So STEAM is science and technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. But even before that, there was always the sci-art movement, which started way back in the 60s and the 70s. It's that when artists and scientists collaborate on projects together. So it doesn't talk about all those other aspects like engineering and mathematics. That developed more in the educational field as a response to the fact that science and art were lagging behind in this country at a certain point. But sci-art is really the original movement of an interdisciplinary collaboration between artists and scientists.
If I was just the lay person standing in front of a sci-art project, what might that look like?
So from my art, what is an example of sci-art? So for me, what I do is I collaborate with scientists to inform the work. And so I've been a particle physics enthusiast since the 80s. And so for the past 20 years, I've been really working with particle physicists. For me, one of my installations like Origination Point or Fluidic Data is to find a way to visualize in a multisensory experiential way, not just the science in the sense of the data behind it, but the possible impact it can have on you as a person when you understand these science concepts. So when I learned about the Big Bang and when I learned about the Higgs boson particle, it fires up my imagination. And I see the implications of it in the real world. So when I learn about a new scientific idea or a theory, I want to find a way to create art that allows people to understand it in a sensorial way. So for me, one of my SciArt installations, you'll look at it and you won't maybe think that it's science, but it actually is communicating science concepts. First, by using the technology that's possible because of the science, and second, visualizing the ideas in the work.
But in a way that you hope is evocative and has an emotional impact.
Exactly.
It seems like in some cases, some of your installations, and I'm thinking of your fluidic data installation at CERN, which takes data from the Large Hadron Collider and feeds it into the art itself. So it's an ongoing expression of work in progress. And as the scientists move through their building, they can actually see what's going on with their experiments through your art.
It was a unique opportunity because it was designed with the scientists. And it was the first time that CERN had brought in an artist to work with physicists in this way. So it wasn't just the art, like origination point was me. I had no one to answer to. And I got to create my own installation, which showed at the Havana Biennale. And it was about and informed and inspired by particle physics. But fluidic data, I had to work with them, and they were very particular about the data being correct and how the particles were being visualized. It was a huge collaboration that took almost 3 years.
What's your original background? Do you come from an art background? Did you get a degree in physics? Did you do both?
Good question. I have completely an art background. My parents always said I was an artist since I was three. I was doodling and making pictures. They knew I was going to be an artist, and they always supported it. Then I went to art school, and I graduated in 84. The world was a different place back then, and I was always interested in technology. And so I think the science track started when I discovered holography in 1984. And then I went to New York after I graduated from California College of Arts and Crafts, and I went to study at the New York Holographic Laboratory. I took some holography workshops with the two pioneers of holography, Dan Schweitzer and Sam Murray. They're the ones that turned me on to particle physics. Holographers are really tuned into that. I don't have a science background. Science and math are not my forte. But over the years, because of the concepts behind particle physics, I became obsessed with it. And so it was kind of like that, lurking in the background, kind of inspiring my work all the way up until I started working with CERN. And that's because I said to myself at one point, it's time for me to really go deep and do some research and find out what's pseudoscience, what's new age science, and what's real science. Because I was thinking I can't tell the difference anymore from reading all the layman's books. And so that's when I asked to do a research day at CERN. And that started me on the path to really getting into where I am now, which is about science literacy. And I'm really into now using my art to communicate science literacy, and especially in this particular time that we're living in right now with science denialism going on.
Denialism? I love that turn of phrase.
Did I just make that up?
I know some of your more recent projects, like the Biota project that was part of the Species in Peril exhibition, or your current project, the Pollinator Concentrator, are much more drifting into the realm of biology. I mean, does that compel you in the same way?
First of all, to clarify and give some credit out there, so Pollinator Concentrator is the art piece of the artist Anna MacArthur. So as I mentioned, I create youth projects from my own art research, but then I also work and design youth programs where I select artists to be part of the program and then build the curriculum around the artist. So BioSTEAM is the move towards biology. So I started to go to Portugal and came across a woman and a group of artists that were doing bioart. And this really made me see a whole other realm that I was not aware of before. The shift in science from particle physics and physics to biology is happening. And so there's a lot of research now and a lot of breakthroughs are happening. So that's kind of new. You know, so for example, DNA sequencing, which I incorporated into Biota. And it's all connected. And the exciting thing about biology is it's easier for students to connect it to the real world because we're talking about the earth and nature and plants and trees. Whereas all those years of trying to communicate particle physics, I realized how much harder it was.
It's kind of abstract.
Very abstract.
Especially for a young person, yeah.
Yes, so that was always a big challenge. You know, I've always been an abstract thinker, and some of the kids are, but a lot of the kids are not.
After having worked at the intersection of arts and sciences, crunching huge volumes of data and making it visible and impactful, what do you feel like is the important thing that arises out of that intersection?
When I showed Origination Point, which was my first time visualizing particle physics concepts, so it was very complex if you read it, but when you walked in, it was a full installation. So there was someone that came up to me and said that they felt it here in their stomach, that they really felt it. And that was a huge compliment for me and that I was on the right track. And at the same time, a physicist, a particle physicist, a very strict particle physicist, not connected with art in any way, said to me, this is really amazing. You know, she really got the physics part of it. Or when I took Origination Point to Cuba, and everyone from the people that were cleaning the space to artists related to the piece. So I think that's important to me because I'm trying to reach all kinds of people and not just in the art community or in the science community. So I'm always looking for that.
The artists have a lot to bring to the world of science, but how do the scientists feed back into what the artists are doing?
When I started working on fluidic data with the scientists, I heard that a lot. Oh, well, the artists get a lot out of it. What do we get out of it? Why the fluidic data was different for CERN is because it was the first time that they decided to do it differently, where you work with the scientists. So together, you design something. It's not the same as just going and getting inspired, and then the artist just goes back to their studio and does whatever. So that question came up a lot. And so I feel like because I worked with Johan Bonilla at the very beginning, who was getting his PhD, and then now he's actually working at CERN, we sat together. And he was one of those physicists that could understand both languages very well. And I already had experience and time working with physicists. So we kind of could understand each other's language a little bit. And so that created a very unique collaboration. And his goal, too, was he wanted this installation to be not just for the visitor, but also for the physicists that work there, because the installation is in a stairwell that is mostly 90% of the time just the people that work there going up and down. So he wanted it to be that a physicist could geek out on it. So it has that. It has different layers. So, for example, every pod, every one of the 54 pods represents a particle. You know how many particles there are in the universe. So we got these main ones, and they light up when they are actually activated according to the statistical data from the LHC. A physicist could get a lot more out of it, but the average person can also just get their level of understanding from it.
Given that the focus of this program is the humanities in the broadest sense, I feel like scientists, mathematicians, engineers are in such a better position to justify their work, to get funding for their work, to combat science denialism if you can explain why your work is important, why it's deeply meaningful and connected to what else is going on.
Since I'm also a curriculum developer and an educator, I learned way back about the multiple intelligence theory and the fact that we all have different strengths in our way of thinking and the way of communicating. It still blows my mind. Howard Gardner, who invented multiple intelligence theory, keeps coming up with new ones. So there's the ninth. It was eight intelligences. And now the ninth one is existentialism. So it's the innate ability and strength in being able to contemplate the universe. And these are people who become priests or become philosophers. And I thought, isn't that fascinating? Of course, all of these you can develop. There are many skills that I've had to develop, you know, like I'm not strong in math, right? But there are things that you're naturally born with. So he maybe didn't have that intelligence so fully developed yet, but it doesn't mean he can't develop it. And I definitely have the existentialism, because I'm always contemplating, you know, the why and the how and the universe and where we come from, which is why I'm attracted to physics. If you go to the CERN website, the mission statement is to understand the nature of reality. I was like, this is my place.
And explaining that reality is in some ways the work of the artist.
I have always thought it was to the detriment of science to separate itself from the humanities, because science doesn't happen in a moral and ethical vacuum.
That's right.
And integrating that more, I think, would benefit everybody. But I think also there's something about your art and the projects that you've worked on, Agnes, that really show the interrelatedness of phenomena, that it's not just going to be particles doing things. It's particles doing things, and it makes other particles do things. It's not just water. There's water with all these microbes and all this life that, even though we can't see it, it's there. And I think showing how much bigger any one thing is a really sort of important impact for me of your art. To me, that's not something that comes out of reading a scientific journal.
That's right. The artist does have that strength, which is why when you bring together an artist and a scientist, and lately I've been bringing in cultural specialists, indigenous cultural specialists, like you were saying about the ethics. For social cause means humanitarian, ecological, social, even personal development, right? All of that is the humanities. So bringing in like an indigenous cultural specialist, their worldview inherently does not see science and art as separate. They don't even have a word for science, which is why it's so hard for people to look at indigenous culture and say there's a science. But it's because everything is science and art. What they call natives in science, which I believe was coined by Dr. Greg Cajete, who is an advisor on our curriculum and for youth programs. He's at UNM. He's an author of 7 books. And this one book on Native science really opened my mind to it. And I've always gone back to it and used it to inform the curriculum, because that's what needs to happen. And I believe it is happening on a certain level. The whole interdisciplinary, transdisciplinary, it's starting to see that we can't just see things from one point of view, one way of knowing. And so if we just act in our little bubbles and don't care about how it's impacting another discipline or something else in the planet, then that's when you get the problems that we're in. That is another thing that I'm always making sure is communicated. And you can see it as a thread in all of the work.
Wonderful getting into all of this with you, Agnes. Just a real treat. And if you would like more information about Agnes Chavez and her work, you can visit stemarts.com online or agneschavez.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.